Welcome to the Calder Farmstead.
Now the Icehawks back out to center in transition. Carlson with Quenneville 2-on-1. Right with Carlson from the Quenneville scores.
Here's a chance for Parrott.
Five. Scores! On the face-off!
Up it's Emminger. Go back to Werenski. Has it. Shoots one. Bounces off a man. 5 seconds left. Werenski. Another jam on the shot. Turning and firing.
It's gone in overtime. The Bears breaking out. Right side with Bear. Looks like cutting to the net. Bear will score!
And here are your hosts, CeCe and Sean.
Hello and greetings from
Radio City Music Hall in New York City.
One of the rare occasions where we are together. Welcome to the Calder Farmstead Podcast, episode number 100. We have reached the century mark here for Sunday, May 8th, 2022. If you were hoping for a podcast featuring a guide to the annual Future Farmers of America Gala, we are not going to be much help. This is an American Hockey League podcast, and my name is CeCe Hockley, the AHL editor of Full Press Hockey.
And I'm Sean O'Brien from StatsTrack and the AHL's only league-wide analytics guy.
And as always, we thank you for tuning in with us, and of course, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Today is a special episode, as it's not only episode 100 of our podcast, it is also our 21-22 end season AHL award show. If you're normally a podcast listener on the audio version, today might be a day to head over to the YouTube channel, as I think you're going to want to see the show. Tonight we have 9 awards to give out in the following categories: Best AHL TV Broadcast, Best Broadcaster, Best Coaching Staff, Best Hockey Flow, Best Goalie Mask, Best Goalie, Best Defenseman, Best Forward, and we will cap it all off with the Most Underestimated Team, aka the Mea Culpa Award. Most of those categories are pretty straightforward. However, 2 probably require some explaining.
Okay, so first off, for Best Hockey Flow, for those unfamiliar with the slang of the hockey world, we're talking about the AHL player that we judge as having the best hockey hair this season in the American Hockey League.
The Mea Culpa Award is for the team that we were the most wrong about in their favor during our preseason predictions. So way back in October, we kicked off the podcast with our season preview, and we did a preview of each of the 31 teams playing the season. We gave outlooks for their season, including best case and worst case scenarios and most likely case scenarios for each team. We're pretty spot on with a bunch. We had the right idea, but didn't go far enough. And a few teams that we thought were going to be good didn't quite shake out. But this award is for the team that we were the most wrong about how good they were going to be. Hence the mea culpa, because we're bad for underestimating them.
And of course, in the spirit of transparency, we will release our full voting ballots after the show, as well as copies of the receipts for donations associated with Best Hockey Flow and the Mea Culpa Awards, like we did last season. So, without further ado, let's get the show moving. Sean, what is our first category?
Our first category is the Best AHL TV Broadcast. During the course of our show this season and the previews and recaps we did, we got to see all 31 teams' AHL TV broadcasts several times. We thought it best to celebrate the best ones, so here we are. Our 3 finalists are the Manitoba Moose, the Chicago Wolves, and the Utica Comets. For those unfamiliar, let's break our finalists down a little bit more here.
All right, we're going to start with Manitoba first. Not the flashiest AHL TV broadcast in terms of graphic design, but still, solid graphics on display. Their broadcast team with Daniel Fink and Derek Meach on color analysis did a very good job. You may be thinking that it's unfair that Manitoba is a finalist here because they share an arena with an NHL team. Well, let me tell you, so do others in the AHL, and they didn't even make the ballot for Best AHL TV Broadcast. So the Moose's place here wasn't a gimme by any means.
I think my favorite part of the Manitoba broadcast was that their intermissions weren't just a random player interview that got the standard get pucks deep, play our game kind of quotes, but they actually talked about the flow of play. The analysis they did was solid and smart. And while not a part of their AHL TV broadcast, I always like to give a shout out to Austin Siragusa on their Instagram Live doing their benched pregame show. No one in the AHL really does that. And I think that was a smart use of social media to promote their team and the broadcast.
Next up, our second nominee is the Chicago Wolves. And Chicago's AHL TV broadcast is powered by the pregame hype intro. Blaring Motley Crue to a pretty good CGI video intro, plus the in-arena show, really shows that the Wolves know how to entertain their fans and get them ready to be loud for the game. The broadcast also features good play-by-play from Jason Shaver and color analysis by Bill Gardner. They do a good job of keeping me from getting up to stretch or grabbing a snack during intermissions, as well as they actually have content, actual content and analysis for those stretches where the game isn't going.
They make good use of their graphics, too, to display helpful facts, interesting info during the game. Their intermission segments, like you said, are solid. My favorite part is definitely the intro, though. No one does that better than the Chicago Wolves. And that's not to say the rest of the broadcast isn't great, but that intro with the Wolves really sets them apart.
Last but not least is the Utica Comets broadcast, our third and final nominee. And while the Comets have a great graphics package that mirrors ESPN broadcasts, they've got strong camera work and a solid rotating cast of color analysts that pair well with broadcaster Jason Shia, the Comets broadcast doesn't just check all the boxes you'd want for an AHL TV broadcast. It really sets the standard in many, many ways.
And I think that really says it all. Watching Comets games this season, I would genuinely forget at times that this wasn't like an ESPN regional broadcast or a regional sports network broadcast. The camera facing work in pregame and intermission between Shia and his color analysts really sets them apart and provides some good insights into what's going on with the team. And that's not just for someone who doesn't need the game explained to them, a seasoned veteran fan. If you're tuning in for your first Comets game, or if you're a diehard member of Ball's Army, Utica's broadcast has something for you in those intermissions and breaks in the action. So those are our finalists for the best AHL TV broadcast: the Manitoba Moose, the Chicago Wolves, and the Utica Comets. Cece, would you like to do the honors and tell us who our first winner of the night is?
Here we go. Our winner is the Utica Comets. And here to accept the award for best AHL TV broadcast on behalf of the Utica Comets are Jason Shia and Eric Kowiatek. Jason, Eric, welcome on.
Congratulations, guys, for winning the Calder Farmsteads 21-22 Best AHL TV Broadcast. This was not an easy choice for us. A lot goes into making a broadcast successful. Who is someone in Utica behind the scenes that fans may not know that makes everything you guys do on camera possible?
Well, first of all, Eric is, we call them the guys in the truck. They do an amazing job every night. And I made this point the other, during our internal awards banquet, because Eric won an internal award by the team, is picked by Robert Esch, our team president. And my point was that we started a television broadcast last season from nothing. It was an idea. I literally came to the team with an idea. And Eric, along with Chuck Obernesser, who has to be thanked as well, we sat together and built something that didn't exist. We created something ex nihilo. So I was so proud and continue to be so proud of what we're able to do. You know, if we look at where we started to where we are now, and Eric comes to me with ideas, and my eyes grow like saucers, because I know whatever he's coming up with is going to be something great. And he really is one of the best guys in the technical side I've ever worked with. And my thank you, of course, goes to him and Chuck for what they're able to do and accomplish on a nightly basis for us.
And for me, I would just have to say, I couldn't narrow it down to one person. Like, everybody involved, from people that we work in the office every week that come up with the ideas and the stats and whatever, to the actual production, like the camera guys. We had a lot of new guys that came in last year, and they've done an amazing job. In the truck with me, Doug and Nick, so much experience between the two of them. It makes what we do a lot easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a lot of fun watching your finished product, and the fact that you guys only started doing this a handful of years ago is amazing. Is there anyone else you'd like to thank or give recognition to that made this award possible for the Utica Comets?
For us, I want to say that specific to our on-air talent, we've gone through it. We've had a lot of different people on the broadcast. I mean, Gary Heenan, who's the coach of Utica University, has come on and done color with me. And, you know, he adds a whole other element. I'm telling you, if Gary, he took to doing color like a fish he takes to water. I mean, it was just amazing. And if the NHL, you know, had a guy like that in the broadcast, he'd eat it up, because so much personality, having so much fun and knowledge combined in one person. Adam Pollock, who is our vice president, who's oftentimes with me on the air, another person, did an amazing job with the broadcast. Annika Zaleski, who played at Colgate, who works for us in the office, came on last year as one of our reporters. But we've had so many people come through the broadcast, and you know, it adds a whole other element. We're breaking down the play live. We're you know, we're giving you score updates. The graphics are phenomenal. It's so much fun to do it. And like Eric said, there's a lot of people who put work towards it. And the product, I have to say, the product is the best that in the American League. I know I'm a little selfish here thinking that, but I do think we put on a phenomenal product.
A little bit. That's fair.
Well, I mean, when you're accepting best broadcast, I think you can say that definitively.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that we failed to mention actually is this season, last season when we started it, we were strictly doing TV. We didn't have fans at the beginning of the year. As we added them in, we still focused mainly on the TV broadcast. And then this year we had to meld it together with our in-house. We're actually running both at the exact same time and trying to separate the two. I would be remiss if I didn't say shout out to Gina Nassavera, who was amazing working with us, so that we were able to, between me working with Jason on the TV and Gina, that we were able to melt the two shows together.
Yeah, you guys did a great job.
I've got one quick last question. Just with the Binghamton Devils phasing out, you know, Utica, the old Utica packing up shop, going to Abbotsford, just with the, you know, the affiliation and the franchise shuffle that sometimes happens in minor league hockey, just in regards to a brand, how did you guys navigate that and how did it affect the broadcast?
I mean, our last broadcast was a goodbye to Trent Call and the players who had been there for all those years. And it was a very emotional thing because they were, you know, such a part of Utica. And Eric knows this because he's been there since the beginning. And I'll let him talk to speak on that. But the New Jersey affiliation is great because of its geographical, proximity to Utica. So we can have our players playing in, you know, Utica on Friday, and maybe there's a Saturday game in Newark and they're on the ice. Not that they couldn't do it in Vancouver, but our fans could watch that. They can go to the games. That connectivity is meaningful. And I've loved what they've done. Obviously, the season has gone very well for us, which helps. And there are a lot of New Jersey fans here, which is also great too. So from my perspective, it's been seamless. I'm interested to see what Eric says though.
So the one thing that comes to mind is, we've been affiliated with Canucks, what was it, 9 or 8 years? And it was a Canadian team. Like, obviously, the fans are following every single player throughout the whole organization. So we had a strong following, as far away as they were, that were paying attention to everything that was happening in Utica. And when we were switching over to the Devils, it was like, what's going to happen here? How's this going to change things? Like, but the fans for the Devils have been just as accepting and following and all in on everything. So honestly, that hasn't changed too much from my perspective on that.
Awesome. Well, we've taken enough of your guys' time. Thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations. Thank you once again. We appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice. Appreciate it. Next on the docket, we have our Best Broadcaster Award. You may be thinking, how do we have the Best AHL TV Broadcast Award and the Best Broadcaster Award? Well, it's the same way that the best player doesn't always play for the best team. Best AHL TV Broadcast is a team award, while the Best Broadcaster Award is a individual accolade. That being said, our finalists are Daniel Fink of the Manitoba Moose, Mark Benetti of the Stockton Heat, and Jason Shia of the Utica Comets. For those unfamiliar, let's break down our finalists a bit more.
Daniel Fink is finishing up his third full season behind the mic, doing play-by-play for the Manitoba Moose, calling a handful of games in 2018-19 as well. Fink first came aboard with Manitoba in 2016 as the manager of hockey communications. Prior to that, he called games for the WHL's Regina Pats from 2012 to 2016 and the L'Orange Ice Wolves of the SJHL from 2010 to 2012. He attended broadcasting school at SAIT Polytechnic in Calgary, Alberta. Personally, what I liked about Fink as a broadcaster is his ability to call the play in an incredibly informative way while still being concise. He gives a lot of information about the play and what's happening on the ice without sounding like he's trying to pad his word count in a book report. That's an important skill for a broadcaster to have, and Fink has it in spades.
Next up, the second nominee is Mark Benetti from the Stockton Heat. Mark is in his first season as the voice of the Stockton Heat. Prior to this season, though, Mark was the voice of the CHL's and then the ECHL's Rapid City Rush from 2013 to 2021. He called 585 consecutive broadcasts over seven seasons of hockey. And Mark is no stranger to being a finalist for the best broadcaster, as he was named a finalist for the ECHL's Broadcaster of the Year award in both 2020 and 2021. Benetti is a graduate of the University of South Carolina, serving as the lead broadcast assistant from 2011 to 2013 for the then Charlotte Checkers broadcaster. It's under our third nominee, actually, Jason Shia. And I'll tell you, Sean, what I liked about Mark Benetti as a broadcaster is he's developed a sense of style with how he calls a game. He knows how he wants to call certain events and make them his own. I could read a transcript of calls made by AHL broadcasters and be able to pick out which ones are his. And honestly, that makes him stand out a lot as a broadcaster in my book.
Our third finalist here is Jason Shia. Jason may be finishing up his second full season as the broadcaster slash director of communications for the Utica Comets, but he's certainly no rookie. He started his hockey broadcasting career in the UHL back in the mid-2000s, calling games for the Motor City Mechanics and the Chicago Hounds before jumping over to the Charlotte Checkers, then in the ECHL in 2007. Shia then made the jump up with Charlotte to the AHL in 2010 and was with the team for its 2019 Calder Cup championship. Shia also filled in for NHL broadcast for the Carolina Hurricanes for three seasons as well. What I liked about listening to Jason as a broadcaster is his ability to hit the high notes. His goal calls are routinely finding the right energy for the moment, whether it's the eighth goal in an 8-0 blowout or an overtime game winner or anywhere in between. That's not an easy skill to master, but Shia has it. So those are our finalists for best broadcaster: Daniel Fink, Mark Benetti, and Jason Shia. Cece, would you like to do the honors and tell us who our best broadcaster in the AHL is?
Gladly. Here we go. Our winner is Jason Shia. And here to accept the award for best broadcaster is the Utica Comets' own Jason Shia. Jason, welcome to the Calder Farmstead. Thanks again.
Oh, welcome guys, back, appreciate Jason. It, guys.
Making quite a haul here. Congratulations on winning the Calder Farmstead's 21-22 Best Broadcaster, another award that was incredibly challenging for us to determine a winner. We went back and forth a couple times here.
Well, first of all, Mark Benetti in the competition this first year in the American League, my former intern in Charlotte, I remember Mark calling me or writing me an email. This is years ago now. I mean, a long time ago. So he said, "Hey, I'd like to be a play-by-play broadcaster." And I said, "You know, what are you getting a degree in?" I think at University of South Carolina. He said, I'm getting a degree in biology." I said, "Great. Start a podcast. Go be a biologist. Don't be a play-by-play broadcaster." He didn't listen to me. He came in and worked broadcast with me. Ended up calling, you know, games here and there, but nobody works harder than Mark, and no one's worked harder to get to where he is right now. I'm so proud of him.
And he was another too. I remember listening to early games early in the Stockton season, and I was like, "This, I like him." He stuck with it. He was a mainstay of our ballot across the season.
Well, let me say this though. In comparison to me, he's a lousy broadcaster. He's no comparison. So that's the correct choice. However, he's still a nice kid and I like him a lot.
Yeah, I ran across Mark when he was working with Rapid City and I was covering Idaho a number of years ago. So the hockey world is small. When Jason's like, "Oh yeah, he was my assistant," I'm like,
"Yeah,
the hockey world is small once again." Small. So
yeah.
Jason, you've been calling hockey games for a long time now, like we've alluded to a little bit here. What is your favorite call you've ever made? And what was your favorite call this season?
Well, my favorite call I've ever made without hesitation is my Dougie Hamilton overtime game winner in the National Hockey League. It's my, I did NHL overtime games before, but I never had an NHL overtime win. But that one, you know, you're in the moment. So it's NHL TV. You can't get it wrong, right? You have to get it right because it leaves an indelible mark, those moments. And I remember hitting that, you know, scores, and I knew that I did it really well. You know, give the crowd time to come in there, then hit it one more time. And then I got out of it and let Tripp, my color commentator, take over. Then I remember just sitting back on my chair going, I'm generally pretty critical. I was like, okay, I got that one. And then they used that goal call the NHL did on the, in a commercial the entire season. So that was pretty nice to be. And I'm not a full-time guy in the NHL, so to have my goal call used like that, I know what I am as a play-by-play guy. The one thing that I do very well is hit the high notes on those big moments. I can bring the game to its crescendo with the best of them. So that's what I grew up listening to Gary Thorne and Bob Cole. Maybe not the most precise play-by-play guys, like Doc Emmerich is in a whole class of its own in terms of being able to do the play-by-play. There will never be anybody better than him at the technique of play-by-play. As far as the greatest moments in the games are concerned, I think Gary Thorne and Bob Cole, who were contemporaneous to one another, were the two greatest and would be on my Mount Rushmore along with Doc Emmerich.
All right, Jason, is there anyone else you'd like to thank or give recognition to that helped you in your broadcasting career as a whole?
Well, I want to go back because I want to answer the question about my favorite moment this year. Sorry, that's my fault, but If you talk about a team, it was really strange because you don't generally get too excited during the course of the season, right? Like, you know, what happens during a season? That's you get some overtime wins or some comeback games or you're down. But to win that 12th in a row for the record was and is a game I will not forget, and a game that I typically am easy to raise to an emotion that's right here generally with me. So the crowd is chanting undefeated. And you could see, we came back from behind that game. We were actually playing Charlotte. We were down 1-0, came back to win the game. The building was going bananas. It was something I'll never forget, being in the locker room afterwards, and the guys were celebrating as if we won a championship. It was amazing. I mean, they weren't overboard, but it was pretty intense for a moment that happens. When was it? In December, maybe, or even November? I mean, you don't really get those kinds of moments in those months, but it's something I'll never forget. It was great. I tried very hard not to screw that up. I also tried very hard not to go crazy on the moment, and I just laid back and said, the Comets have made history in Utica tonight. That was my line, and I think I think I hit it pretty good and let the crowd take over after that. So that a phenomenal moment for the organization. I was lucky to be a part of it. In terms of people that I have to thank, coming in, first of all, Robert Esch, my boss who hired me, he took a chance to bring me in. He could have hired anybody for the job. He wouldn't have hired anybody better. I think that's pretty obvious at this point, but he did hire me. So credit to him for hiring the right guy. And then everybody that I've worked with, this group of people that I work with in the front office is the best front office I've ever worked with, the most cohesive group of people. And it's a really, really special place to work with. I love everybody that I come to work and see. And I can't thank the entire staff of the Utica Comets enough. They've made me feel like family there, and I love every second of it.
And I hadn't realized that 12th game was against Charlotte. I mean, you want to talk about some poetic...
No, there's nothing. I know what you're saying. Nothing like that. It would be different if it were still the Canes organization. But I know Jordy from his days back as the head coach when he was in Charlotte as the Carolina Hurricanes AHL assistant coach. So I know him. And I knew Zach Dolpe because Zach was one of our guys before. And I think maybe one or two other guys that just by happenstance happened to come over and play for them. But it's a totally different organization in terms of its hockey operation side of it. So, yeah, there's nothing like that. But it was coincidental that they happened to be the team, you know, that we were playing against.
Last question, and this is the one I kind of alluded to before we started recording, Jason. So as a pro wrestling fan myself, I have to point this out before we let you go. It says on your bio on the Utica Comets website that you began your broadcasting career in World Championship Wrestling at the ripe age of 17 years old. And after doing some research, you know, you probably could have been nominated for best WCW flow with those locks of yours that I saw from back in the late 90s there. But inquiring minds want to know, you got to work alongside the likes of Mean Gene Okerlund. I mean, what a dream. How did you land that gig?
Oh man, this is in the Wild West days of pro wrestling. It would never happen today. It couldn't happen today. It's a publicly traded company, that World Wrestling Entertainment. You know, I haven't watched a show in 20 years since I left, or whatever it's been. However, it's been since 2001. So yeah, about 20 plus years. They heard back then there were local hotlines you would call. I don't know how old you guys both are, but I'm 1980, so I'm 41. So there was no internet. If you wanted scoops, you got to get scoops somehow. Everybody wanted scoops. So you would call these pre-recorded hotlines. And we had one in Detroit that was very, very popular, that a WCW executive, a man named Zane Bresloff, would listen to. And Zane called me up one day and said, "Hey, why don't you come work for us?" Because I was a big WWF fan. And he said, "Come work for us." And I did. I started working on the NWO hotline, the New World Order hotline, started recording messages once a week. They flew me out to my first pay-per-view. It was in San Diego. I was 17 years old when I went to work for my first pay-per-view, started doing online broadcast. And again, this was online. Nobody knew what the hell these things were. I remember somebody saying back then that the technology was there, but the users didn't have any ability to get the real player and stuff for people using dial-ups back then. There wasn't a lot of internet stuff there, and certainly wasn't wireless. So whatever, that doesn't exist, but yeah, it was crazy. I think back now, and it's 20 plus years, and I'd be sitting in catering at some arena, and in would walk Hulk Hogan, in would walk the Macho Man, in would walk Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. You know, you'd be in a room and Ric Flair would be in there, and you're like, it's surreal. I remember it was the first time I ever laid eyes on Hulk Hogan, and he was in the same room as me. I'm thinking, this is like, it's like the Easter Bunny walked in the room. No one expects him to be an actual real person. And here they were, and I was 17 years old. I had hair down my back, and I was a mark. I mean, it was a mark for pro wrestling back then. But I quickly, in 3 years of watching that industry from within and seeing what it was really like, I quickly fell out of love with it and moved on with my life, which I was happy to do it. It was a nasty business back then. Wouldn't be like that now because it's all above board now. But back then it was not a good place for a 17-year-old.
Very fair. Very fair. Congratulations once again, Jason. Thank you so much for your time. We actually have two awards to send to you to the Utica Comets office. So be on the lookout for those. Some very nice glass pucks with your name and everything attached to it. So be on the lookout. Those will get out in the next couple weeks. But once again, congratulations and thank you so much for your time, Jason.
Oh, I'm very, very thankful to you guys. It's very sweet of you to reach out. And this award does mean something. I mean, we put a lot of work into these broadcasts and the hours put in. So the fact that you guys are recognizing, and it's not just me. Listen, the American League is comprised of some phenomenal broadcasters. You know, Chicago was nominated for Best TV Broadcast. There's no two people in the world I love more than Jason Shaver and Billy Gardner. They're two of the sweetest men ever. And I was lucky enough to call finals with them. And they were on the Chicago side, obviously. So many great guys in this business who are just waiting for a chance to one day, God willing, get to the National Hockey League. So until then, happy to call games in the AHL and thank you for the recognition.
Absolutely. And that was one of the reasons behind us wanting to create the award and do our own thing here is we're in the unique position to see so many of these broadcasts, some of which are brilliant like yours, others which are a little more bare bones. And we thought you deserved that recognition for the hard work that you put into it and the great work that you do.
Thanks, right, guys. Jason. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to head to a short break here. If this is your jumping off point for the show, thank you for tuning in. Please subscribe wherever you're checking us out from, as well as follow us on social media. Links to all of that and more can be found on our Linktree page at linktr.ee/TheCalderFarmstead. We have Best Coaching Staff and Best Hockey Flow Awards coming up next. Stay tuned. Our next award is not for the best head coach, but for the best coaching staff, because it takes a village to run the hockey side of a team, and more than just a head coach deserves that credit. So we looked for contributions from the whole staff before we arrived at our three finalists. They are the Manitoba Moose, the Stockton Heat, and the Utica Comets. Let's break those finalists down a little bit more. Cece, give me the stats capsule for our first finalist, the Manitoba Moose.
Alrighty, Manitoba, Mark Morrison in his first year as head coach in the AHL with the Moose. Marty Johnson and Eric Dubois are his assistants. Drew McIntyre, no, not the WWE one, is the goalie development coach. Richard Bew is the video coach. And Kyle Vorlo, is the strength and conditioning coach. Team record, 41-24-7. Net power play, 16.8%. It's good for 12th in the AHL. Net penalty kill in the regular season, 85% even, also good for 12th in the AHL. All situations PDO, 98.57. Win percentage after a loss, 67.7%. Back-to-back win percentage was at 57.7%. And the opening night lineup games lost was 411.
So from Manitoba's side of things, they were a staff that really overcame a lot, and the team just kept rolling. From their roster on opening night, they lost, as CC said, 411 man games from that roster. That's very high, and included some big pieces too. This wasn't just, you know, third and fourth liners that fell off the roster from opening night, but guys like Dominic Toninato, David Gustafson, and Ville Heinola missed a lot of games in a Moose uniform. The Moose had nights where seven of their top 10 scorers were out of the lineup. Yet they managed to persevere and not just survive, but thrive. And they did so without relying on the old hockey trope of hot goaltending. They finished second in the hotly contested and deep Central Division because this staff made the magic happen on a nightly basis. That's our first finalist. CC, would you please give me the stats capsule for our second finalist, the Stockton Heat?
Absolutely. Stockton, their head coach Mitch Love is in his first year as bench boss in the AHL period, let alone the Stockton Heat. Joe Sorella and Don Knockbauer are his assistants. Thomas Speer is the goaltending coach. Cole Schultz is the video coach. And Gord Farnell is the strength and conditioning coach. Team record 45-23. Net power play percentage 17.9%. Good for seventh in the AHL. Nice top 10 ranking there. Net penalty kill 91.8%. That is good. That is at the top of the mountain there. First in net PK in the AHL. All situations PDO 101.58. Win percentage after a loss, 81.8%. And back-to-back win percentage is 70%. In the opening night lineup, games lost, 436. Wow. Sean, enough said there. What did you see from the Heat staff this season?
A team that was just seemingly unfazed ever. Adam Rzeczka played 16 games for them this season, and I thought you'd see a big downturn when he got the call up to Calgary at the end of November. Nope. The Heat just kept on trucking. Captain Byron Fraze misses time. No problem. Connor Mackey misses time. No problem. Six-game road trip. No problem. Whatever curveball was thrown at them, it never seemed to matter. They just continued to dominate. They never got blown out and lost back-to-back games just three times all season. That's consistency that you just do not see in the American Hockey League anymore. And it is truly impressive. That is our second finalist. CC, please give me the stats capsule for our third finalist for best coaching staff, the Utica Comets.
Absolutely. So Utica is headed up by Kevin Dineen. He is in his ninth season as an AHL head coach, but his first with the Utica Comets. Sergei Brylin and Ryan Parent are his assistants. Brian Eklund coaches the goalies. Adam Perner handles the video. And Steve Nightingale is the strength and conditioning coach. Overall team record was 43-29. Net power play percentage was 19.5%, good for second in the AHL. And net penalty kill, 87.7%, good for fourth. So top five rankings for both net power play and penalty kill. All situations PDO, 102.53. Win percentage after a loss, 51.6%, and back-to-back win percentage was 66.7%. Starting lineup games lost, 343. Sean, what did you see from the Utica coaching staff this season?
We talk a lot about buy-in when it comes to new coaches, and you could tell from the opening game of the season that the Comets roster had cashed in any savings bonds because they bought all the way in from the word go. Veterans, rookies, prospects, career minor leaguers, didn't matter. They put their faith in this staff, and they were rewarded. Don't get me wrong. The Comets went on a puck luck bender for the ages to start the season, but when that wore off, the Comets staff kept looking forward and moving forward. Every night we saw them, the Comets looked prepared. They were jumping and passing lanes they knew were coming. They were exploiting weaknesses in the neutral zone and sending rushes the other way in a heartbeat. That's good coaching, period. So those are our finalists for best coaching staff, the Manitoba Moose, the Stockton Heat, and the Utica Comets. Cece, would you do the honors and tell us who our winner is?
Gladly. Our winner for the best coaching staff is the Stockton Heat.
Here to accept the award for best coaching staff on behalf of the Stockton Heat is head coach Mitch Love. Mitch, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations for winning the Calder Farmstead's 2021-22 best coaching staff. This was another award that was really hard for us to decide, but we ultimately feel like we picked the right staff.
Well, thanks for having me on here today, Sean. Obviously, a great honor for our team, our coaching staff, our support staff here in Stockton. And obviously, there's some great coaches across the American Hockey League. So as a staff, we feel extremely honored and privileged to accept this award, for the consistency of our team played throughout the year. And again, this isn't an award that's, it's individually based. It's definitely a team award. It reeks of the consistency our players were able to put forth this hockey season. In the regular season, we take a lot of pride here in Stockton on our process, the day-to-day process, and not getting too ahead of ourselves, controlling the controllables for us is, not spending energy on who's in and out of our lineup due to injuries, recall, and just really focusing in on our individual progression and our team play. I think that was a big thing for, our consistency. I believe we had four streaks of back-to-back losses, never had a three-game losing streak throughout the regular season, which we take a lot of pride in here. And we hope bodes well for us in a long playoff run potentially here, not getting too high, not getting too low. So obviously a great honor. It's been great coaches and coaching staffs that have been able to achieve this award over the years in the American Hockey League history, and we feel honored to be a part of that class.
Yep. And I mean, that was one of our factors too in giving you this award is, the consistency in that. And let's dive into that a little bit more. The HL season is a grind that constantly throws curveballs, sudden call-ups, and roster upheaval at teams. It seemed like this year the Heat constantly had answers for whatever was thrown at them this season. What was the biggest reason you guys managed to keep things going and not get bogged down by the problems that typically plague AHL teams and cause them to go on these big losing streaks throughout the season?
Well, I think a big one is our leadership. I mean, we've got a kind of a group of eight individuals that we see lead our hockey team in different facets, quiet leaders, vocal ones, lead by example type leaders. When we rely heavily on them for, making sure that our team play, our individual plays intact on a consistent basis. Like I mentioned in the previous question, just, not spending energy on who's in and out of our lineup. I mean, we're in the American Hockey League. This is a league that you're faced with recalls and player movement constantly. And we were pretty lucky in terms of knocking on wood. We stayed fairly healthy throughout the hockey season. There wasn't a ton of recalls to our NHL affiliate in Calgary. And then guys just stepped up. These guys had career hockey seasons. Our young players that were first year pros were impactful to our group. I think that was also key. And at the end of the day, we just took a lot of pride on the process, just day to day. How do we get better? Not putting the in front of the horse and really just focusing in on that as a group. And I was real proud of our team's effort. And now that's parked. It's a regular season award. Now we want to try to chase a Calder Cup here against some real good competition. And we're looking forward to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Last question here real quick. Is there anyone else you'd like to thank or give recognition to that made this award possible for the Stockton Heat and your staff?
Well, I start with obviously, the Calgary Flames organization, ownership through to management, the opportunity for myself and our coaching staff to have the privilege to work here in Stockton with our players. Obviously the players, they're the ones that go out and execute and put the work in daily here. And have to listen to me from day to day, and that's not always easy. And then just, our coaching staff, our support staff, the guys that unpack bags at 2 a.m. when we get home from a road trip so our players can sleep, our staff putting the hours in they do on video and individual meetings, that's very important. And then really at the end of the day for me personally, just my family, my girlfriend, my daughter, the sacrifices, my family, the sacrifices they've put in over the years. And during a long hockey season, that maybe people don't expect or think of, when you're in this industry, they're a very, very big factor for us as a staff and our players. And, we can't do that stuff without family.
Absolutely. Thank you once again, Coach Love, for your time. We have this lovely award that we will be sending to the office for you. So keep an eye out for that. We only have one of them. So I don't know how you're going to decide amongst the group of you who's going to get to keep it on their desk. But I will let that the decision be up to you. Thank you once again and congratulations. Good luck in the playoffs. We're certainly interested to see how it all falls out.
I appreciate having me on here, Sean. And thanks again for the award. And it's a pleasure being on today.
All right, then. You have a good one, Mitch. Our next award is a very non-standard AHL award. It's the Best Hockey Flow Award. Hockey has a long and storied history, and it's one that's full of long and flowing hair. Inspired by the Minnesota All-Hair team that has been a source of so much fun for the hockey community, we decided to have an award for the Best Hockey Flow in the AHL, and here we are. This was not an easy field to narrow down to three finalists, but we managed somehow.
Yes, and our three finalists are Anthony Lewis of the Texas Stars, Trevor Carrick of the San Diego Goals, and Alex Limoges, also of the San Diego Goals. Again, this is a rather visual portion of the show. You got to see the locks. You got to see the lettuce. So if you're normally on the podcast version, maybe head over to YouTube to check out this segment.
So without further ado here, first up, we have Anthony Lewis of the Texas Stars. As you can see here on our little sideboard here, very thick, full flow that has not just length, but also volume to it. It's very impressive. He was a finalist last year. So we'll see if this is the year he can finally capture the throne.
Our second curls either. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. our second finalist is Trevor Carrick of the San Diego Goals. A much more established flow, I feel like that's a veteran flow. That's not a rookie flow. I also love the like Top Gun look that he has going on there. I think that's
cool. Cool as the other side of the pillow, Stuart Scott used to say.
Yeah, very much. And our last finalist is a bit of a newcomer here. That is his teammate on San Diego, Alex Limoges, Penn State alum, you know, just got to always pump the Penn State alum tires there, but a surprising candidate this year. Cause I don't think he's, had the hockey flow for his entire career. This isn't a lifelong thing for him, but I honestly say he filled that hair real well. I'm impressed. Those are our three finalists for the best flow: Anthony Lewis, Trevor Carrick, and Alex Limoges. CeCe, you have the envelope.
I do.
Please tell us who our winner will be.
The winner for Best Hockey Flow is Anthony Lewis from the Texas Stars. Unfortunately, we were unable to get Anthony Lewis to come on and accept the award. However, the Texas Stars did send us a hair highlight reel to share with everyone. So in lieu of an acceptance speech, we are going to play that instead. And special thanks to John Peterson, the media director and broadcaster over with the Texas Stars. And oh, it's in slow-mo. This is in practice. I mean, just look at those curls. They even got bigger than the pictures that we showed.
He's had an impressive flow his entire career, it seems like, and it only grew better with time. It was really sad last year because we had several of our finalists end up going and chopping them at the end of the year. I remember when Jerry Mayhew did it, and I was very sad about that. Oh. I don't think Anthony Lewis is ever going to cut that off, though. I think that is a lifestyle choice for him at this point forward.
It is. And you mentioned last year, you know, our winner was Axel Janssen-Fjällby, and he played a lot of games. How many games did he play with the Capitals this year?
Oh, quite a few off the top of my head, but he got into quite a lot. He was a good bottom six forward for them this year. The only reason he did not make our finalist award is we definitely decided you needed to have a minimum games played, and he was just below that threshold because, you know, having great hockey hair is one thing, but it also has to breathe. And it needs games played to breathe. So he unfortunately didn't make it, but Anthony Lewis, just absolutely fantastic hockey hair. Well-deserving of this award.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, with getting the nod for the nominee last year and then coming in and winning it this year, I mean, you absolutely, yeah, you can't deny it. Like he had to take the title this year, especially with AJF not appearing in this awards episode,
not registering as a competitor. Yeah. Well, we have this lovely physical trophy to be sending to Anthony Lewis and the Texas Stars. So if, you know, for them who are listening at home, please be on the lookout for that. It'll be coming your way shortly. And in the spirit of this award, a $100 donation to Locks of Love will be made by us on Anthony Lewis's behalf.
And we are going to take a short break here. If this is your jumping off point of the show, we do thank you for tuning in. Please subscribe wherever you're checking us out from, as well as follow us on social media. Links to all that and more can be found on our Linktree page at linktr.ee/TheCalderFarmstead. We have the best goalie mask and best goalie awards coming up, so stay tuned. We're still going to have some fun.
This is another one of our awards that it very much is not a standard category in the AHL awards pantheon, but it should be. To quote the immortal philosopher Jack Rackham, because what if it all goes unremembered? It's the art that leaves the mark, but to leave it, it must transcend. It must speak for itself. It must be true. And that's what our best goalie mask category is, remembering the art that left a mark.
Getting a little metaphysical here on the Calder Farmstead. Wow. All right. Well, as Sean alluded to, our three finalists for best goalie mask are going to be Ivan Prosvetov of the Tucson Roadrunners, Hugo Alnefelt of the Syracuse Crunch, and Dustin Teen Wolf of the Stockton Heat. And again, this is a rather visual portion of the show, just like our previous segment, Best Hockey Flow. So if you're normally on the podcast version, we would highly recommend you head over to the YouTube video, and we'll do our best to describe each mask. We'll give it the best effort that we can as we show the video audience the pictures of them for our audio listeners. So there we go.
So here we are. We will start with our first finalist here, Ivan Prosvetov of the Tucson Roadrunners. His mask, just the like a very bone kind of looking Kachina head that has like robot eyes. And like the Tucson sand color kind of on the outskirts there. I really like the detail. I think it also looks really intimidating when you're kind of like looking straight on to him as a goalie to see just the like glowing robot eyes in the Kachina skull. It's
got like a cyborg kind of. Got a cyborg spirit to it, sense of feel. So yeah, it is rather intimidating. That's a good word for it as well.
I also just like the kind of detail that you see. It's not just a matte color on the outskirts. There's, you know, some styling, some like the teeth at the bottom. I really like it. It's very unique too. It stands out in your memory.
Right.
All right. Second up, we have Hugo Alnefelt of the Syracuse Crunch. This mask is titled The Skull Vikings Guardians of the Lightning Valhalla. And has two, just as the title described, it has two skeleton Viking characters on the sides that look like the most metal thing I've ever seen on a goalie mask. And it has, you know, the lightning logos on the sides, and then has a scroll, you know, at the bottom where the chin is that says Alnefelt on it. It very much felt like a heavy metal mask the minute I saw it. So
It's a heavy metal mask. It's also reminiscent if you played Super Nintendo fighting games for the Super Nintendo in the mid-90s, Spinal from the game Killer Instinct. It's like if you took that character and dialed him up to 11 on the Norse mythology scale, that is what you would get, because it is just, it's metal. It is a undead skeleton warrior straight from the halls of Valhalla, back from the dead to wreak havoc in net for the Syracuse Crunch on the head of Hugo Alnefelt.
And last but certainly not least is a late entry here this season, but it's Dustin Wolf of the Stockton Heat. This wasn't his mask to begin the season. So when I kind of circled back at the end, I was surprised to see that he had changed. And then I saw the mask and was like, oh yeah, that is incredibly cool. The detail and the design that goes to the wolf and the wolf's head, it very much is another that it's not just another generic team you know, Stockton Heat, Calgary Flames, or, you know, a team branded mask. It very much is personalized to him and, you know, stands apart from the crowd.
And the fact that, oh, man, I feel lost opportunity for the Arizona Coyotes to draft this kid, because to include the wolf in the, you know, you could embrace that kind of coyote motif a little bit there. That would have been an interesting mask to see. But no, to really to have the big Calgary Flames logo on the side to stay on brand with the team and with the organization, but to customize it enough to embrace his surname and everything like that. I mean, it's a pretty sweet looking mask. And yeah, definitely, like you said, a late contender in the later stages of the 2021-22 regular season.
I mean, bigger missed opportunity was, you know, the AHL affiliates, or sorry, the NHL affiliates that have an affiliation with the Chicago Wolves or the Hartford Wolfpack. I mean, that could have been their guy. Dustin Wolf was not like a first round pick, which is surprising that we look back on that now. But like, there was the opportunity.
Chicago Wolves as well.
Yeah. Just nobody went for it. So those are our finalists for best goalie mask: Ivan Prosvetov, Hugo Alnefelt, and Dustin Wolf. Cece, would you like to do the honors and tell us who our winner is?
Gladly. Our winner for best goalie mask is Hugo Alnefelt. And here to accept the award is none other than Hugo Alnefelt, Syracuse Crunch goaltender. So welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations on winning the Calder Farmstead's 21-22 best goalie mask, Hugo.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Yes. And a very different mask that you've had in the past titled the Skull Vikings, Guardians of the Lightning Valhalla. And in working with David Gunderson on this mask, Hugo, what was the conversation like in creating this concept?
So I always like to like stand out with my gear or do something different. So that's basically what I told Dave, who I've been working with since I was like 15. He's always painted my goalie masks. So I just gave him some small ideas that I had. And then he called me like an hour later and was like, I just got this cool idea. The thing he said was like, Tampa, it's known for pirates, a parade they have, and me coming from Sweden, Vikings, of course. So he just kind of mixed those together and came up with this cool looking skull Viking.
Yeah, it was one of our favorites early on in the season, and it carried the whole way through. It seems like a fair amount of professional goaltenders these days are getting new masks every season. Are you planning to keep this one around for next season, or are you thinking about something different for 22-23?
I think I'll do something different for next year. It's kind of cool to just keep every mask from every season as like a memory to have back home too. I guess I'll start working with him pretty soon again on something new. I have some small ideas, but we'll see.
That sounds good. Well, we look very much forward to seeing that one, and maybe we'll be seeing you here again next year.
Hopefully.
Hugo, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you coming on. We do have a physical award to send you, so be on the lookout for that from the Syracuse front office.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, Hugo. Good luck in the playoffs.
Thanks.
You bet.
We're going to be sticking with goaltenders, but pivoting to the gameplay on the ice instead of the beauty of the artwork on their buckets. That's right. It's time to list the nominees for best goalie of the 21-22 AHL regular season. Yes, we considered some of the more readily available statistics, but we also looked at some of the more advanced stats because, of course, we did. That's who we are as a podcast. But we looked at things like point shares per game, goals saved above average per 60 minutes, quality start percentage, and the defensive environment in front of them. We also used our eye test combined with that and all of those numbers to make our final choices. The finalists are Arvid Soderblom from the Rockford IceHogs, Kevin Poulin from the Laval Rocket, and Dustin Wolf from the Stockton Heat. Let's break those finalists down a little bit more. CeCe, give me the stats capsule for our first finalist, Arvid Soderblom.
Arvid Soderblom, yes, 22 years old, went undrafted, and this being his first year in the AHL, 38 games played, 21 wins, 0.919 save percentage, 0.523 goals saved, above average per 60 minutes. That is seventh in the AHL among goalies who started 25 or more games. 0.277 goalie point shares per 60 minutes. That's good for fourth in the AHL. His defensive environment in front of him, 72.34. That's the 10th worst in the AHL. So a great goaltender in spite of that. Sean, what did you see from Arvid Soderblom on the ice this season?
On the ice, Soderblom was the key reason the Ice Hogs had so much success this season. Lucas Reichel, you know, notwithstanding, Soderblom was what really helped carry this team. His goaltending prowess was a big reason the Ice Hogs were able to lock down so many late game one goal leads. The Ice Hogs would go into prevent mode and just let Arvid Soderblom make saves. And that's exactly what he did. Other teams counted on their goaltender just as much as Rockford counted on Soderblom, but no team counted on their goaltender more than Rockford did for Soderblom. And he constantly delivered. His nickname should be considered the mailman.
Oh, interesting. All right. Next up is Kevin Poulin, 32 years old, drafted in the fifth round, 126th overall by the New York Islanders in 2008. This is his eighth season in the AHL. 30 games played, 18 wins, 0.920 save percentage, 0.487 goals saved above average per 60 minutes. That was ninth in the AHL amongst goalies who started 25 or more games. 0.283 goalie point shares per 60 minutes. Good for third in the AHL. And the defensive environment in front of him, 69.27. That is the eighth worst in the AHL. So, Sean, how did Poulin look for you in Laval this year?
There probably is no one in the AHL to be more thankful for taxi squads than Kevin Poulin. He had two call-ups from the AHL, from the ECHL earlier in the year, but despite playing pretty well in two games that he got into, he didn't get to stay. Then the taxi squads happened and Poulin was recalled for a third time. And this time the Rocket didn't have a choice. They needed him. The Rocket didn't have a great defensive team in front of him either. You know, as you can see from our defensive environment rating, and Laval finished the season with the seventh worst defensive environment rating grade. And it didn't matter. Kevin Poulin put on a show on a near nightly basis, despite regularly getting shelled. He stood tall and is far and away the reason that Laval could hold on until reinforcements from Montreal arrived, and definitely the reason that they managed to bypass the first round entirely in the North Division playoffs and take a bye.
Last but not least, we have Dustin Wolf, nominated for Best Goalie Mask and now getting the nod here for Best Goaltender on the Ice as well. 21 years old, drafted in the seventh round, 214th overall by the Calgary Flames in 2019. This is his first season in the AHL. Well, he did play a handful of games in 2021, but his first full season in the AHL. 47 games played, 33 wins, 0.924 save percentage, 0.646 goals saved above average per 60 minutes, third in the AHL among goalies who started 25 plus games, 0.264 goalie point shares per 60 minutes. Good for seventh in the AHL, and a 83.96 defensive environmental rating. That's the ninth best in the AHL and the best amongst the three nominees in this category. Sean, what did you see from Dustin Wolf on the ice this year?
The fresh-faced Dustin Wolf was nicknamed Teen Wolf by us last season, but he certainly didn't play like the rookie he technically is here. Most goalies struggle with the transition from juniors or college to the AHL. But not Wolf. He showed remarkable poise and maturity and never seemed to get rattled or let the moment get too big for him. Despite being the busiest goaltender in the AHL on the number one team in the league for most of the season, that usually paints a pretty big target on your back and the spotlight shines kind of bright there. But Wolf just quietly went about his business and was a dominant number one goalie for the entire season. That's impressive in and of itself. And then you add in the age that he is on top of it and the draft pedigree or, you know, almost lack of one that he possessed. Dustin Wolf battled his way here, and that's something that should be applauded. So those are our three finalists for best goaltender: Arvid Soderblom, Kevin Poulin, and Dustin Wolf. CeCe, Would you like to do the honors and tell us who our winner is?
Absolutely. Our winner for best goaltender this year is... Kevin Poulin of the Laval Rocket. Unfortunately, we were unable to get Kevin Poulin on the show to accept this award, but we do still want to highlight what a great season he had, as well as many other goaltenders in the AHL this year. Shawnee, this was not an easy choice for us to make. That is for sure.
No, it wasn't. Our top eight, top 10 goaltenders easily all could have kind of slid in and around at the end, but we had to make a choice. These were the choices we made. But the path that Poulin took to get here is remarkable too. I mean, he bounced all over in his career from the AHL to the NHL to a bunch of stops in Europe to the ECHL this season before finally taking the starter's crease on January 11th in Laval. He was fifth in minutes played since January 11th. His save percentage is 22 points higher than the team average in Laval. That's tied for the league best among goaltenders playing 25-plus games. No one outperformed the rest of the goaltenders on the roster better than Kevin Poulin in the AHL. Some were as good as him, but no one was better. Laval rode Poulin down the stretch and earned a first-round bye in the playoffs largely because of him. We have this lovely memento here to send to Kevin Poulin in Laval. He should look out for that. But congratulations once again to Kevin Poulin. This is Kevin Poulin. This is a well-deserved award for him and someone who I don't feel like gets a lot of credit on the bigger scale of the AHL. So we're happy to be able to give him some recognition as well. We are going to head to a short break here. If this is your jumping off point for the show, thank you for tuning in. Please make sure you subscribe wherever you're checking us out from today, as well as follow us on social media. Links to all of that and more can be found in our Linktree page at linktr.ee/thecalderfarmstead. We have Best Defenseman, Best Forward, and the Mea Culpa Awards coming up next. Stay tuned. We're going from goaltenders to the next line of defense, the actual defensemen. Our three finalists for best defensemen are Joseph Duzak of the Toronto Marlies, Jake Christensen of the Cleveland Monsters, and Jordan Gross of the Colorado Eagles. If you're unfamiliar with their work, let's dive into them a bit more so you can see how their season earned them a seat at the table here. CeCe, please give me the stats capsule for our first finalist, Joseph Duzak.
Absolutely. Joseph Duzak, 24 years old, undrafted, just got done with his fourth year in the AHL, rather. 61 games played, 7 goals, 45 assists for 52 for total points, 0.43 even strength points per game, good for 7th in the AHL, 0.44 primary points per game, 4th in the AHL rankings, 5.38 point shares, that's the 95th percentile on a per-game basis, depth chart value grade of a first pairing defenseman by the analytics model that we have. Sean, those are the stats. What did you see from Joseph Duzak on the ice?
On the ice, Duzak's game is all about playmaking vision. He finds passing lanes and open teammates and sets those plays up with a full complement of moves. Fake slap shots, looking off defenders, slip passes, shoulder down, driving the lane, etc. He does so with such decisiveness too. By the time the puck gets to him at the blue line in the offensive zone, he's already decided where he's going with it and how it needs to get there to maximize the scoring chance. That's an impressive trait of his and one that has definitely carried him to this point in this season.
Next up, we've got Jake Christensen of the Cleveland Monsters, 22 years old, undrafted, his third year in the AHL, 62 games played, 13 goals, 32 assists for 45 points total. 0.44 even strength points per game. That's good for 5th in the AHL. And 0.52 primary points per game. Good for 3rd in the AHL. 5.5 point shares, 92nd percentile on a per game basis for that statistic. Depth chart value grade is of a first pairing defenseman by the analytics model. That's what the stats have to say. Sean, what does his play? What does the play of Jake Christensen on the ice have to say?
On the ice, Christensen was fantastic under pressure along the walls and routinely turned dump-ins into plays up the ice with his puck control and awareness. He would activate off the rush and off the blue line during the cycle, and he injected life into the Monsters offense. In the 14 games he missed this season, the Monsters offense was over half a goal per game worse than when he was in the lineup. I also think his defensive abilities are underrated. He was routinely doing his job on defense and taking care of his assignments in my viewings of his tape, despite the fact that Cleveland's defensive, you know, acumen this season was less than stellar. I don't believe that's Jake Christensen's fault, and I think he was a contributor for a better defensive environment on that team than the other way around.
Lastly, from the Colorado Eagles, we have Jordan Gross. Jordan is 26 years old, undrafted, fourth year in the AHL, 61 games played, 10 goals, 55 assists for 65 points total, 0.59 even strength points per game, first in the AHL, 0.57 primary points per game, first in the AHL, 8.1 point share. That's the 99th percentile on a per game basis. Depth chart value grade. Any big surprise here? Top AHL defenseman by the analytics model. Those are what the numbers have to say. Sean, your observations of Mr. Jordan Gross on the ice.
On the ice, Gross was by no means a passenger on the juggernaut Eagles offensive system. This wasn't the story of someone racking up secondary assists, making basic passes to a star, and then letting them do all the hard work. No, Gross was a play driver and very much a key in making the Eagles an offensive wagon this season. He showed great poise at the blue line with the puck and wouldn't throw pucks away under pressure for low danger shots from distance. He'd jump down into the cycle and find guys in the slot or across Royal Road for high danger scoring attempts on a regular basis. It seemed like at all times he knew where the defensive coverage was and rarely made mistakes or made bad turnovers. Especially for someone who has the puck on his stick as much as Gross did, that's damn impressive. Those are our finalists for best defenseman, Joseph Duzak, Jake Christensen, and Jordan Gross. CeCe, would you please do the honors?
Alrighty, here we go. The winner is... Jordan Gross. And here to accept the award is none other than Colorado Eagles defenseman, Jordan Gross. Jordan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Jordan, congratulations on winning the Calder Farmstead's 21-22 Best Defenseman Award.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yeah, Jordan, you spent almost the entire season on the taxi squad in Arizona last year. Then you more than doubled your AHL career totals and scoring this season. Did your time on the NHL taxi squad help you find that next level to your game? I mean, it was a weird, wacky year last season. Or was it something else a little more deliberate and responsible on your part?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely a factor. I was on the taxi squad the majority of the year last year and practicing with the NHL team pretty much every day. I think that was a big factor in helping out. And then I think coming here to Colorado, the coaching staff here is great. They really push and try and get the best out of you every day. And I think they're a really big part along with the teammates we have here. We have a really good team, so that definitely helps out a lot too.
Jordan, is there anyone else you'd like to thank or give recognition to that made your season this year and this award possible for you?
Yeah, I think just all the teammates, staff around the Colorado organization wouldn't have been able to have this good a year without all the people surrounding me.
Jordan, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on winning Best Defenseman. Good luck in the playoffs. We look forward to watching you perform in the playoffs along with the rest of the Eagles.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.
Our penultimate award for tonight is quite simply Best Forward. We don't have an MVP award because the valuable part of that debate is often tangled and messy in ways that leave no one satisfied and nothing really decided. So we eschew all of that and simply look at best, the best coaching staff, the best goaltender, the best defenseman, and now the best forward. Our three finalists for Best Forward are TJ Tynan of the Ontario Reign, Kiefer Sherwood of the Colorado Eagles, and Sheldon Rempel of the Abbotsford Canucks. If you're unfamiliar with their work, let's dive into them a bit more so you can see how their season earned them a place here as a finalist for Best Forward. CeCe, please give me the stats capsule for our first finalist, TJ Tynan.
Gladly. TJ Tynan, 30 years old, drafted in the third round, 66th overall by the Columbus Blue Jackets in 2011. Ninth year in the AHL, played 62 games this season, 14 goals, and get ready for it, 84 assists for 98 total points. Didn't quite get the century mark, but damn impressive nonetheless. 0.79 even strength points per game, good for fifth in the AHL. 0.95 primary points per game, good for eighth in the AHL. 9.1 point shares, good for the 97th percentile on a per game basis. And that means his depth chart value grade, pretty high. Top AHL forward by the analytics model. Those are the figures. Sean, your observations of TJ Tynan on the ice.
On the ice, Tynan was someone who, when he had the puck on his stick, you knew. You didn't have to look for a jersey number or wait for Jared Schaffern to call his name. You knew. It felt like every time he touched the puck, you were about to witness something wild, whether it was a pass through traffic or a deke around someone or a snipe. He felt capable of embarrassing the opposition every time he was on the ice. I also think his defensive abilities are underrated, as well as his ability to be an effective forechecker. Those are unsexy parts of hockey that someone with his offensive prowess could definitely get away with doing less. But Tynan doesn't. He puts in the work to be an effective forechecker, hustles on back checks, and has good awareness in his defensive zone. And that's commendable.
Second nominee for best forward is the Colorado Eagles' own Kiefer Sherwood. 27 years old, went undrafted in his fifth year in the AHL currently. Just finished his fifth year. 57 games played, 36 goals and 39 assists for 75 total points. 0.85 even strength points per game, good for second in the AHL, and 1.11 primary points per game, good for first in the AHL. 9.8 point shares, 99th percentile on a per game basis, and his depth chart value grade is, of course, once again, top AHL forward by our analytics model. Again, those are the numbers. Sean, what did you see from Kiefer Sherwood on the ice?
Sherwood felt like he flew under the radar a lot this year, which is insane for a guy who finished first in the league in primary points per game. Sherwood was a multifaceted threat in the offensive zone. He's one of the best shooters in the AHL and is able to rip one-timers as well as beat goalies cleanly from mid-range. But he also has excellent playmaking vision, and he's constantly looking over his shoulder so he can find teammates across Royal Road regularly instead of just making safe plays up and down the boards. He's also great off puck, finding soft ice in the home plate area. He was someone who could just terrorize a team constantly, and they had to make sure they knew where he was every single time he was on the ice. And spoiler alert, they did not.
Last of our nominees for best forward is the Abbotsford Canucks' own Sheldon Rempel. 26 years old, went undrafted, fourth year in the AHL, 55 games played, 33 goals and 36 assists. 469 nice points. 0.73 even share points per game, good for eighth in the AHL. 1.04 primary points per game, good for second in the AHL this season. 8.9 point shares, that's the 99th percentile on a per game basis. Depth chart value grade, of course, top AHL forward from the analytics model. Sean, what did you see from Sheldon Rempel on the ice?
Sheldon Rempel's ability to see moves ahead paired with his puck skills in tight really separates him from the pack. He's also excellent at creating offense from the perimeter and finding passing lanes through a maze of sticks and bodies that sets up high danger chances. I think his defensive game is a bit underrated as well. While he'll never be a defensive specialist, he has the work ethic and awareness to hustle and break up plays in the defensive zone. I saw several sequences from him where he'd break up two or three dangerous plays in his defensive zone on a single shift. And again, from a guy who is one of the best offensive players in the AHL, you don't expect to see that kind of 200-foot effort from him, but he did. And that, again, is something that is worth noting and, you know, commemorating. Those are our finalists for best forward, TJ Tynan, Kiefer Sherwood, and Sheldon Rempel. CeCe, would you please do the honors?
Gladly. Our winner for best AHL forward this season is... TJ Tynan of the Ontario Reign.
Unfortunately, TJ was too busy making anyone who picked San Diego to win that playoff series look foolish. Those people will go unnamed. So instead, we'll give TJ a little bit more love here as an acceptance. I remember last season when Colorado Eagles coach Greg Cronin said that Tynan was the best player in the league, and both of us kind of scoffed at that. Like, Tynan was clearly very good, but best. And here we are, a little over a year later, giving him our best forward award. This, lovely glass frosted puck here. It says best forward TJ Tynan. It looked like he found a different level to his game last year in Colorado. He was a finalist for best forward last year, but I don't think either of us were sure how much that would stick with last season being kind of short and the competition being, a little on the watered downside with taxi squads kind of ruining most of the fun. But he found a new level beyond that this year and was just dangerous on a level unto himself on a night in and night out basis, combined with, his ability as a forechecker, his, contributions in the defensive zone. I honestly, even though I know the Reigns penalty kill was not great this year, I thought he was good on it. And it, managed to not be truly historically bad because of him. He really did everything for that team. I don't think Martin Furk has the season he does without TJ Tynan. I don't think Jared Anderson Dolan has the season he does without TJ Tynan. It was remarkable how much he raised the tide of all boats on that team this year. And our last award for the 21-22 season is what we have dubbed the Mea Culpa Award. At the beginning of each season, we've done deep dive previews where we talk about any player we think will have a significant impact on the team, as well as a best case, worst case, and most likely case for how each team will finish. This preseason, we talked about 492 players across 31 teams in those previews. Inevitably, we got some of them wrong. The Mea Culpa Award goes to the team we were the wrongest about in their favor. This award also comes with a $100 donation to an educational cause in the market of the winner, because we were dumb, so we should help others be smarter. Our three finalists are the Chicago Wolves, the Utica Comets, and the Stockton Heat. Let's talk about each finalist and what we said about them in the preseason. And I will start with the Chicago Wolves. In our season previews, our best case scenario for the Wolves was finishing with a 56.58% points percentage and a second place finish in the division. We said ill-advised things like Jesper Sjögren didn't have a ton of offensive upside. He finished with 26 points and 6 goals. We said that both Stefan Nason and Andrew Podorowski weren't going to give much to the team in a defensive sense, which was flat out wrong. Both played penalty kill minutes this year and helped power the Wolves to the third best net penalty kill percentage in the AHL. Neither of us thought Josh Levo was going to score 22 goals. All that being said, while we thought the team would be solid, we whiffed big time on some of our player assessments and very much missed the upside of this roster to be one of the dominant teams in the league. CeCe, what were all the things we got wrong about Utica?
Ah, the Utica Comets. Yes, quite an interesting situation over there. But our best case scenario for Utica this season was a 58.33% points percentage and a second place finish in the division. I think our biggest miss here was AJ Greer. In the preseason, we said overall he's a good depth scorer, but not a top line guy at this point. Okay. AJ Greer finished the season in the 95th percentile among forwards, according to the model. Fabian Zetterlin, he didn't even make the preview. Neither did Ryan Schmelzer. Man, we expected improvement in Riley Walsh's game, but definitely didn't expect this much improvement, especially in the defensive zone or in zone exits. Overall, we both were high on Kevin Dineen coaching the team and giving them a boost, but we definitely didn't see this level of improvement coming, especially for such a young team.
Yeah.
So that's what you got for Utica. And last but not least, Stockton. Yes, let's talk Stockton.
Our best case scenario for Stockton was a 58.83% points percentage and a third place finish in that division. We thought Dustin Wolf would struggle initially, but could finish the season as a solid goalie. That was not close to what happened. We said that Jakob Peltier wasn't that adept at attacking off the rush. That clearly didn't play out. We didn't think Nick DeSimone merited mentioning in the preview. That was a mistake. We had concerns about how productive Matthew Phillips and Jakob Peltier would be given their size. We should just not talk about Jakob Peltier again. Like that was, that has not gone well for us historically.
No.
All in all, we thought Stockton would be in the mix in the Pacific, but we did not see the youth movement coming on this strong, especially with a new coaching staff. We weren't sure what to expect from that. It was a very, a lot of unknowns, and we were cautious, and we were wrong in that cautiousness. So those are our finalists for the Mea Culpa Award, the Chicago Wolves, Utica Comets, and Stockton Heat. Cece, once again, would you like to do the honors and tell us who our final winner of the show will be?
Yes, the Mea Culpa Award goes to... the Chicago Wolves. And here to accept the award is Chicago Wolves general manager, Wendell Young. Wendell, thank you for coming on the program here. There he is. Thank you for coming on.
I much appreciate it.
Yes. Congratulations, Wendell, on winning the Calder Farmstead's 21-22 Mea Culpa Award.
Well, it's quite an honor. I think everyone shoots for to have a great team. And when some people rate you lower than you're shooting for, it's always nice to get an award because of that. That's what makes sports so great. It's the fact that there's some teams you think are going to be great and they're not, and there's some teams that just exceed expectations. And I think a big part of our team is we expect to win all the time, but we exceeded expectations.
Wendell, we obviously missed the mark in the preseason in evaluating you guys, hence why we're giving this award to the Chicago Wolves organization. We didn't think you'd be terrible or anything, but we clearly didn't see the upside. You know, 17% points percentage difference, you know, that's sizable. So when you were building this team, what were you looking for and how did it come together?
I think we have the same footprint. I think the key thing of our team, and it starts from the top, is we want really good people. People are make our dressing room, make the guys want to play every night, not just look at the NHL. We want them to live the dream of playing in the NHL, but we want them to know when they're with the Chicago Wolves, you're part of a family. Right off the top, it's good people. And then you look for good hockey players. And that's the next thing. Guys that will contribute to your team. You have your offensive guys. You have your defensive guys. But our game plan is to basically go get the best there is and try to make them better. And again, you know, our team exceeded expectations by a lot of measures, but individuals did too. We knew we were bringing in really good players. Did we think Podorowski was going to be the first player in, I don't know, 10, 12 years or something to get 100 points? That's crazy. 48 goals out of Nason. I think his highest was 21 or something. And like, he's like a, you know, 14 goal scorer. But again, that goes to our coaching. We've want the guys. We always think guys will be better in our organization. That might be a little of arrogance or whatever, but we always feel guys will really come out of the type of player they are under our system, under our tutelage. Alex Lyon, our goalie, we had the lowest goals against in the league for the first time in the American Hockey League of the Chicago Wolves' existence. And he ended up second in the league to Troy Groznik. And, Troy's an unbelievable goalie and deservingly to have the lowest goals against. But Alex is a close second in that aspect.
Wendell, to kind of broaden the scope a little bit here. Now, the International Hockey League was my first foray into minor league hockey as a kid living in Utah. My dad lived in Utah in the mid-80s, so he probably saw your rookie season with the Golden Eagles there, if I were to guess. But I've seen the success of the Wolves, you know, two Turner Cups, two Calder Cups since joining the IHL in 94 and then jumping over to the AHL when it folded in 2001. They've only missed the playoffs 5 times in 28 years of hockey. As a player and now heading the front office, how would you explain Chicago's continuing to thrive as a franchise for almost 3 decades now?
Well, I think it starts from the top with our ownership and Buddy Myers and our main ownership and Don Levin. Don Levin demands to win. He wants a first-class organization. He wants the guys treated right. So all those things put together, that sets the standard that we have. And our standard before every season is to be the best team in the league. We want to be the last team standing. We want to win the last game in the playoffs. And that's the standard we set. You know, some organizations are just there to develop the young guys. Some organizations really, I don't see a drive to, you know, be in first or you know, exceed in the playoffs sometimes. And that's their agenda, and that's respected in that aspect. But we have a major thought process that we want to win and develop at the same time. And I think when you're winning, you're developing your players. And I think that's what really happens. And which goes on with us, you know, we get into the playoffs. I think players, I always say like one playoff game is worth probably, it's probably worth five regular season games. So the farther we go in the playoffs, the better we're developing players, the better the organization. Almost over half the players that have played for the Chicago Wolves have played in the NHL in some aspect. And that says something about our organization, the kind of people we bring in, but the kind of players we develop also. You know, St. Louis Blues won a Stanley Cup with a lot of players that came through our organization. That's what we want to be. We want to be a team that wins and develops. And when the players leave and go on to better things, we want them to look back and go, wow, that was a really great part of my career playing for the Chicago Wolves.
Thank you very much, Wendell. Is there anyone else you'd like to give thanks or recognition to that made our wrongness in this award possible for the Chicago Wolves?
I just think it's the guys on the team. They proved you guys wrong. Our coaching staff proved you guys wrong. Did I sit before the, you know, before the season? I might have had a higher expectation than you guys, but I like really to finish first overall in the American Hockey League is quite an accomplishment. I'm proud of our players and what they've done. We've had guys with career years, as I said, but we've had a lot of other guys contribute. But it's a, you know, we win as an organization. And I think that's the biggest thing that we do is win as an organization. And we put a big smile on our face proving people wrong. So thanks, guys, for that.
Anytime.
Anytime.
Congratulations on winning the Mea Culpa Award. Congrats on the great season to the Wolves. Good luck in the playoffs. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day. We know you're a busy man for coming on and accepting the award.
Guys, thank you very much for the award. Thanks for covering us. We appreciate it. The American Hockey League appreciates everything you guys do. You know, we're a great, we're a great sport off the beginning, but we're a great league to watch. And it's a fun, entertaining level of hockey. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Wendell.
Thank you, Wendell. That is our last award to give out. So it's time for a quick recap. Our best AHL TV broadcast went to the Utica Comets. Best broadcaster went to Jason Shia of the Utica Comets. Best coaching staff was the Stockton Heat. Best hockey flow was Anthony Lewis of the Texas Stars. Best goalie mask was Hugo Alnefelt from the Syracuse Crunch. Best goalie was Kevin Poulin from the Laval Rocket. Best defenseman, Jordan Gross of the Colorado Eagles. Best forward, TJ Tynan of the Ontario Reign. And the Mea Culpa Award went to the Chicago Wolves.
Well, 9 awards, and we had a great time putting on this show. Yeah. We hope you had a great time watching it.
And yeah, that will do it. That is it for the show. Thank you for watching and or listening. The Calder Farmstead is part of the Full Press Radio Network. You can listen to this and several other great hockey, sports, and sports entertainment / pro wrestling programs at www.fullpresscoverage.com. Just click the podcast drop-down menu in the top right portion of the website. It's the sound of the list populating. And enjoy, and of course, with all that great programming on Full Press Hockey, Full Press Coverage, and the internet at large, we thank you for making this part of your day.
And if you guys are enjoying the Calder Farmstead, please make sure you subscribe so you get episodes in a timely fashion. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon, please rate and review the podcast. Or if you're watching on YouTube, which I hope you did today, we got all dressed up for you and everything. Mm-hmm. Please like the video, comment what you thought of the episode. Doing so helps others find the show, and your reviews help us improve it. You can also follow the show on social media at The Calder Farmstead on Instagram and Facebook, and at Calder Farmstead on Twitter. Links to all of that and more can be found on our Linktree page, which is linktr.ee/The Calder Farmstead. Big thanks to Adrian Drake, who made our theme music. You can find him on social media at AD_dysfunction. That's AD_DYSFUNCTION. So we can make music for you too. CeCe, where can people find you?
My name is CeCe Hockley. You can find me representing Full Press Hockey on Twitter at FPC_AHL and at my personal Twitter account at CeCe Hawk, SeeSeeHawk. The former account, AHL news, notes, playoff updates. The latter account, my personal account, mainly hockey stuff, of course, but classic rock, movies, my daily Wordle scores, you name it. Hopefully, if it keeps me interested, it's going to also keep you interested as well. So check out my writing on the Full Press Coverage Network at fullpresshockey.com and follow along on my Colorado Eagles coverage during the 2022 Calder Cup playoffs. Sean, enough about me. Where can the people find you?
I'm Sean O'Brien. You can find me on Twitter at SeanO'Brien81. That's SeanO'Brien81. I'm also on Instagram at SeanO'Brien_81. My Instagram account's not as active, but I do the jersey of the day because I get to wear a jersey every day for my job. They let me do that. So I, you know, thought of a good place to showcase it on the Instagram stories there. You can find my stats work on Tableau. That's all of the graphs, all of the, you know, game probabilities, playoff series predictors, all of that fun stuff. That is on my Tableau page. The easiest way to find it is bit.ly/datadumpandchase, all lowercase, all one word. CeCe, it's been fun. Take us home.
Well, and before I do that, Sean, I have a little gift, a little parting gift for us here. Episode 100 coinciding with our award show, but I've been working on this for a while in secret. So Sean has no idea what's coming here, but here it is. I reached out to some friends for episode number 100.
And Sean, congrats on hitting 100 episodes of the Calder Farmstead podcast, my favorite source for AHL news on the AHL in general, but also my Bridgeport, that's right, Islanders. You guys, your coverage on the AHL is excellent, but geography isn't your thing. Connecticut as a state is totally an island, right? Live shot of Google Maps right here. It's totally an island. The name makes total sense, so forget Sound Tigers, hello, Islanders. Again, guys, thank you for having me on the show a ton of times, and thank you for all the content that you provide regarding the AHL. Love it.
CeCe and Sean, 100 episodes. That's amazing. Almost as amazing as the Ice Hogs beating the Chicago Wolves 8-0 to start 2022. It's a very close second to that. But all joking aside, I'm so happy for you guys. I love listening to your show. It's one of my favorite podcasts. I love coming on and talking hockey with you guys. It's always a great time. I am very focused on the Rockford Ice Hogs over here in the Central Division, so I love to hear your takes about the league as a whole, and I love to hear your predictions when it comes down to series for my piggies over here in Rockford. Congrats on 100 episodes, guys. I know you're gonna have a bunch more. I can't wait to listen to them, hear all of your farm jokes at the beginning. Thank you guys for always being so nice and wonderful and great to talk to about some AHL hockey. So cheers to you guys, and here's to hundreds more. And also more 8-0 defeats of the Chicago Wolves by the Rockford Ice Hogs. Love you guys.
Hey, CeCe and Sean, Dina Weinheimer from Field Pass Hockey here. 100 episodes, oh my gosh, I can't believe you guys have hit that milestone already, but congratulations. And thank you for your analytical outlook on the American Hockey League. You know, for a league that is so sparsely covered, we truly need all the voices we can to help amplify this league, its teams, its players, and its fans. So thank you for being a part of that, and thank you for having me on the show as often as you guys have. It's been a pleasure every time chatting AHL and Cleveland Monsters hockey with you guys. But you know, CeCe, I am still the Monster Mash Queen. And that's a title you can never take away from me. But again, congratulations. We'll be talking soon. Great work, guys.
Hey, CeCe. Hey, Sean. Congrats on reaching 100 episodes for the Calder Farmstead. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of it and joining you guys on the podcast here a couple of times along the way. Happy to be a part of this journey, and congrats on reaching triple digits. I wanted to thank you guys for, you know, being so warm and welcoming to me. I'd only ever been on a podcast a handful of times before before I had you guys, you know, you guys allowed me to join you type of thing. So I appreciate it and looking forward to doing it again sometime real soon. Thanks. Congrats.
Hi, Sean and Cece. This is Paige Seward. Congratulations on hitting 100 episodes of The Calder Farmstead. This is such a huge accomplishment, and I'm so proud of the both of you. You guys have created such a great resource for the AHL, and I'm so grateful I've been able to be a part of it. Your show really brings in that extra element of fun just beyond a typical hockey rundown you may see on other platforms, and I think that's something that really sets you guys apart. I thoroughly enjoy tuning in myself to catch up on other games in the league I'm unable to watch, and I'm so excited to see where the next 100 episodes take you and beyond.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Lacey from Killtown, USA, and I want to give you kudos to 100 episodes of the Calder Farmstead. Now we're in the playoffs, baby! Well, we're not in the playoffs. The Barracuda definitely didn't make the playoffs this season. We had way too many red lights go on behind us. But I'm not going to blame the model. We do like blaming models around here. I mean, we are still dealing with the ghost of Mantas Armalis, who had a lot of red lights go on behind him and probably is still driving around Uber somewhere telling people he's going to re-sign with the team. I don't know. But anyway, 100 episodes of Sean dealing with CeCe's macho madness. I mean, that's an accomplishment right there. So congratulations, and the red light is on behind us again, isn't it? What a season. What a season.
Hey, y'all. This is Alex Ackerman from the podcast Syracuse Speaks, and I just wanted to congratulate my friends Sean and CeCe on their 100th episode of their video podcast, The Calder Farmstead. Having been a guest on the podcast before, I can personally speak to how friendly they are, how knowledgeable they are, each in their own unique way, and how fun they make it for their guests when they come on the podcast. I appreciate how they cover all of the aspects of the American Hockey League, and I love coming on there to talk about the Syracuse Crunch and anything else going on in the world of hockey. Congratulations, guys. You do an amazing job, and I look forward to the next 100 episodes.
Sean, CeCe, what's up, guys? This is your buddy Brett Fair with the Arizona Daily Star at Tucson.com in Tucson, Arizona, home of the Tucson Roadrunners of the AHL. You know, what can I say? I think the only thing more fun than watching and listening to the two of you banter each week is actually getting to be part of it a couple of times that you've honored me by asking me to come take part in the show. It's been a blast, at least except for that one time when you kind of forgot, CeCe, that I was still in the green room and you started asking me questions and I wasn't even able to answer. And then Sean, who we all know has a two-part job, bring the hair and bring the comedy, decided to liken me to Matt Damon trying to get on Jimmy Kimmel and those old jokes. So anyway, fun stuff. I know, but I'm honored, seriously, to have even a small part in what you guys have accomplished. And seriously, CeCe, you are the glue that keeps this ball intact. And Sean, you are the little kid that picks up that ball, shakes it, and then throws it against the wall to see if it breaks. So you're the perfect team. Congrats on number 100, and I cannot wait to listen to the next 100, guys.
Sean, CeCe, Calder Farmstead, congratulations on 100 episodes. Nobody looks at the American Hockey League the way you guys do, and we're all better for it. Congratulations, guys.
And that will do it for episode number 100 of the Calder Farmstead. For Sean O'Brien, I'm CeCe Hockley. And y'all keep your stick on the ice.